Oh, no. Hello.
Good afternoon.
Oh, good afternoon. Not sure if there's anyone else on or not.
Say again.
I said, I'm not sure if there's anyone else on. It just was very quiet. I never heard music, but no one identified themselves.
And that's fine. There's actually two people on at right now, which it'll grow. So we will
Okay, well,
start.
I'm going to mute. Okay. Brandy's having trouble. She's lost her phone, and so it'll be a while before she can get back into the classes. She asked that I tell you.
Understood. Hopefully she'll be
Okay.
able to get with her computer, she'll be able to listen to the recordings.
Okay. All right. I'm going to mute.
All right. Today is a Jewish history class. It is, as we always discuss, we teach Jewish history that's connected to the times, and the times are defined by the parashah. And the parasha for this week is Baha'alotcha, and you shall light, or when you shall light. But this parasha is very interesting because it's also the fourth, the fifth, and the sixth parasha Sefer, the three books of Moshe. And if you did a double take, that we were talking about six books of Moshe, and there's really seven books of Moshe. How do we understand that? Because everybody knows there's only five books of Moshe. But as you know, there are 70 ways to understand the Torah. So we're going to explain it as we read it. And we're going to read it starting with chapter 10, verses 35 and 36. Of the book of Numbers, Bamidbar. Now, first off, I have to explain the nomenclature, which we've done a few times before. But if I say the book of Numbers, I'm defining five books of Moses, understood within the concept of the book of Numbers, the book of Bamidbar. It's just one of the five books. It's the fourth of the five books. But I've been discussing with you that there's three books of the Torah in this book of Numbers. And they're composed of the book of Numbers, the beginning, Bamidbar, until chapter 10, verse 34. And then there are two verses that represents the fifth book of Moses. And we will read them and discuss them. And then chapter 11, verse 1, starts the sixth book until the completion of the book of Numbers. And that leaves the seventh book being Devarim, Deuteronomy. So can two verses be a book? That's the question. Some of the Kabbalistic sages say yes. The majority of the Kabbalistic sages say you need at least three verses. But maybe there is three verses. Or maybe this is really something that's out of position. These two verses could be out of position from somewhere else. And therefore, they are creating a connection to that somewhere else that includes the third and the fourth and more verses. But let us read the verses. Since there's only two, we'll read them both in Hebrew and in English. And the first thing we will notice in the Torah, in the Hebrew, there is a nun, a letter nun, all by itself, upside down, and facing to the right, just like the Hebrew letters start at the right. And at the end of verse 36, there's another verse, another nun, upside down, and facing in the same direction. The kind of look like parentheses in the English. We're reading verse 35. The upside down nun begins the verse. Did I do a little Shem Yehud? I don't think so. Shem Yehud, Kutshav Rechu, Ishkin Tebit, Kilu Urshimu, Utkilu, Utkilu Urshimu. Leachda, Leshem, Yudhe Bovate, the Yehuda, Shalim, Beshem, Kol Yisrael, Limud Torah Mitzvah, La Sok Torah Mitzvah, Vayhino Am Adonai Eloheinu, Aleinu Maaseh Yadenu, Pernehu, Aleinu Maaseh Yadenu, Pernehu. Vayhi bin so Aharon, Vayomer Moshe, Kuma Adonai, Yohewahe, Adanu yo, Yohahe dawanu heyo. Weyafutsu o yavecha, weyanusu, mesanecha mipanecha. And it came to pass, when the ark set forward, that Moses said, Rise up, Hashem, and let your enemies be scattered, and let them that hate you flee before you. And then the next verse, verse 36, in the Hebrew, Uvnu ho yomar shuva Adonai Yohewahe Adanu yo Yohahe dawanu heyo Revot alfe Yisrael. The upside down nun ends the second verse. And when it rested, he said, Return, Lord, to the tens of thousands of the families of Israel. Well, the tens of thousands of the families of Israel is a corruption in the translation. And I'm reading this from the Kabbalistic Bible, published by the Kabbalah Center. So you would think their translation would be accurate. But in this particular case, the last three words of the second verse, Ravot Alfe Yisrael. The word Ravot is really, can be parsed into Rav, Resh Bet, and that Bet Vav Ta. But a Yud and a Vav are very similar letters. They're both male letters, as we know from Hashem's name. The Yud, there's discussion in the Talmud about how the Yud grows into the Vav. We also know that in the Parsha Pinchas, there's a split Vav that is split into a small Vav, a Vav from the level of Malchut, and a Yud. So there is definitely a connection, and it's generally assumed, generally discussed, not just assumed, that a Vav can be transformed into a Yud. So then it would become the letters Rav, Resh Bet, and then the word Ait, Bet Yud Ta. That word, or those two words, would be literally translated as a large house. The next word, Alfe, is Mayalef. But understanding the energy of the Aleph, what we are saying is the large house of unity that is called Israel. That is called, is something I'm adding to make the English flow, a literal translation of the three words, large house of my unity, Israel. That is a better translation in my opinion, because it's connected to the more literal connection of the energy of the words. And the energy is what we need to talk about in this book, which is the sixth book. Excuse me, the fifth book, when we are talking about the seven books of Moses. The fifth book is these two verses, separated by the two upside down nuns. We're all familiar with the words or parts of the words of the first verse, because we sing it when we take the Torah out of the ark. But what is really happening here? Do these words really make a whole lot of sense? That this is a prayer? Moses is directing the clouds of glory, represented by the Arise Hashem. Are the clouds of glory Hashem? No. The Kabbalah explains that there's a reference to the seven Sephirot, because there were seven clouds of glory, and they represent a manifestation in the physical world of the seven lower Sephirot. So when the ark set forward, Moses would direct, Rise up, Hashem, and let your enemies be scattered, and let them that hate you flee from before you. Now that's a valid prayer. That makes a whole lot of sense to pray that, to request that of Hashem. Because that's what the clouds would do. They would provide the protection to the children of Israel as they marched in the desert. Now you'll notice I use the word marched in the desert. Were they walking? They were traveling with women and children. What kind of a march is of women and children in those days? People didn't march, they walked. They traveled. Why do we say they marched? Because their movement was a war. Their movement was a constant attack, a constant battle with the owner of the wilderness, the owner of the desert, which is Satan. So the first verse makes sense. It's a request, a prayer. Please assist us in scattering those that hate you. Well, does it really say hate? I don't speak Hebrew that well, but I don't see the word that I'm used to seeing that really expresses hate. Hinam. As our sages have told us, that when the children of Israel hate for no reason, So the word for hate is sinat. And it is possible the word yanusu is a connection to the word for hate. But it's an active hating, because the yud at the beginning of the word, the yud at the beginning of the word is representing the transforming this word into an action. And hate is not an action. So I don't perceive it that way, but I could be wrong. So Wiyanusu would be translated as, and his active hating. But we can understand the whole verse is truly a request for protection. But the final verse does not make sense. And when it rested, who is it? It is Hashem. It is the clouds of glory. It is the children of Israel being an effect of Hashem resting, saying, you've traveled far enough, let's make camp. And then Moses is saying, return, Hashem, to the large house of unity that is Israel. Isn't that, does that really make sense for Moses to say that? He's not directing this. Hashem is directing this. It's time to make camp. And he's saying, return to your resting position. How do we understand that? There are 12 words in verse 35. We know that connects to the 12 tribes of Israel. But there are 13 tribes of Israel. And then there are 7 words in the second verse, verse 36. The number 7 connects to the 7 lower Sephirot. And together, there are 19 words, and the number 19 connects to the name Chava. Chava translates as mother of life. 19 is the number of years in the Hebrew calendar cycle. So we are beginning to see that these two verses can be its own book. These two verses can actually be tremendously strong energy for us to receive. If we count the letters, in the first verse, I miscounted, but I have to start over. 53 letters in the first verse. 53 is the Gimel Nun. And in modern Hebrew, it's a nursery school. But in biblical Hebrew, it's a garden. And usually, whenever you connect to the garden, you're talking about the Garden of Eden. And so you see the connection to the clouds of glory. The second verse, verse 36, has 31 letters, which connects to the Hebrew word Kel, or Aleph Lamed, which is the name of God. Name of God that is connected to where? It's connected to Chokmah, to wisdom. And 84, I happen to be aware of because it's the gematria of the name Ho. 84 represents 42 times 2. It represents the creation of direct light and returning light. Everything we touch in these verses connects to energy, strong energy. And this is really the meaning of why the sages who said, we're talking about seven books of Moses, why they're making this connection to these two verses. If we go deeper into the connections, the first word in verse 35, Vayehi, has a gematria of 31, which is the name of El. The third word, Aharon, has a connection to the number 72. It's not 72 in gematria. It's 256. But that's one of the ways that the name of Hashem, when it's spelled out, that can be its gematria. Moshe connects directly to the fifth name of the 72 names, Mem He Shin, because Moshe's same has the same letters. And the gematria of Moshe is 345, and it's also the gematria of El Shaddai, two names of God that represent Chokmah being transformed into Yesod. Not really being transformed, but flowing into Yesod. The word Kuma has a gematria of 151, and that is two names of God, Elohim and Adonai. Elohim represents Geburah, but it also represents Malchut, and Adonai represents Malchut. And 151 represents the gematria of a mikvah. It's a cleansing associated with the use of a mikvah. So again, everything connects to really strong energy. These verses make excellent repetitive phrases to utilize as you go into a meditation. The sixth book of the seven books, which is chapter 11, verse 1, until the end of this parasha of Baha'alotcha, is about complaining. The children of Israel wanted meat, but it wasn't the children of Israel. It was the Arab Rav wanted meat. We get that from the language. Because the Arab Rav could not handle the energy of food from Shemayim, which is what the manna represents. Food from heaven. And we also have the incident of the slandering of Moshe. And here's some interesting aspects, which I will spend a few minutes talking about. We probably all know the story, the Midrash, about these verses in the Torah that describe Moshe, Aaron, and Miriam speaking. And the cause was a whisper from Zipporah. Zipporah is Moses' wife. Moses decided on his own that because God told the children of Israel to refrain from sexual intimacy in preparation to receive the Torah for 3 days, Moses knew that he needed to speak to God frequently, but he never knew when that would be. And sometimes decisions needed to be made, and he needed to request that information from Hashem. And those decisions sometimes included Aaron and sometimes didn't. So his personal decision was that the Jewish people needed his attention, his involvement, and that was a greater purpose than the marriage of him and Zipporah. Torah was very busy with the raising of Gershon and his second son. And Zipporah was very much involved in the circumcision of Gershon, his firstborn. But still, it's a lot of chutzpah to separate from your wife. Did they have a discussion about it? Did he try to explain it to her? Did he expect her to understand his motivation? And Miriam and Zipporah were standing together, and they saw that Moses transferred some energy to the 70 members of the Sanhedrin, plus two of the members of the Sanhedrin. They didn't get the Moshe energy, they got the Satan energy. And Gershon came running in, and Miriam and Zipporah are standing together, and Gershon is telling his father that Medad and, I think it's Adad, these two people were prophesying in the camp, and people were listening, because after all, how do you tell that the prophecy is valid or not? The Torah tells us the way you tell a prophecy is valid is if it comes true. We have many prophecies in the Torah that have not come true yet. Things like the Armageddon War, which hopefully they won't. Things like the coming of Mashiach, the rebuilding of the third temple, etc. There are many, many prophecies that have not yet happened. So how do we know they're true prophecies? And according to the Torah, the tool to know their truth is to see that they happen. So people don't know if these two men are prophesying correctly or falsely. But Zipporah and Miriam overhear Gershon telling this to his father Moshe, and Zipporah whispers that she feels sorry for their wives and she hopes they'll be happy. And Miriam asks, why? Why would you say such a thing? And Zipporah explains to her sister-in-law a private conversation that Moses has separated from her. And Miriam is concerned about Zipporah because we know we have a halakha. We know that Moses follows the halakha, that his wife cannot, he cannot reduce the marriage intimacy with his wife because of his feelings for her, or her feelings about other things. But Moses made that decision by himself without God's authorization. And afterwards, according to the Midrash, Hashem validated that decision. And now Miriam has heard not a complaint, but a recognition that there's a lack in her life from Zipporah. And she and Aaron are talking. she brings it to Aaron. And she asks him, aren't we the same as Moshe? Don't we both prophesize also? And the truth is they do. But not at the same level that Moshe prophesies. And that's an important distinction. Hashem has validated Moshe's decision to separate so that he could be available to speak to God at all times. And that, the effect of that discussion with Aaron and Miriam walking alongside Moshe, having this discussion, the effect of that is Lashon Hara. Now you'll notice that only Miriam receives the effect of Tzarat, the leprosy, the spiritual disease that's the effect of Lashon Hara. Aaron doesn't get Lashon Hara. Moses, who is the subject of the conversation, doesn't get Lashon Hara. And the Talmud tells us Lashon Hara kills three people: the person who says it, the person who hears it, and the person that it's talking about. But only Miriam receives the effect. And we know the story of Moshe cleansing her with the 11 letters of the healing name, Elna Rafanala. Why is it 11 letters? Well, why does he need to say Na twice, Nunalef, so that it totals 11 letters? What is the purpose behind the 11 letters? And we learn that the 11 letters connect to the Ketoret, to the tool that brings us closer to Hashem. And this is the essence. Miriam really didn't say Lashon Hara, but she accepted upon herself that conversation should have been between Miriam and Moses without Aaron. Aaron should not have been included in the discussion. Remember the best intentions of people. The best intentions lead to Gehinnom. Miriam accepted the cleansing of the Lashon Hara, of the Tzarat, because she needed to be an example of that Lashon Hara, that disease of Lashon Hara, for all of the generations after her. It wasn't that her words were false, because Lashon Hara is truth. It wasn't that her words were inappropriate, but it was not the right time. It was not the right location. It was a conversation to have between Moshe, her brother, and herself. If there was a problem, Tzipporah should have had Tzarat as well, because she's the one who expressed the words. But she was expressing a lack, a feeling. And feelings always are correct. What you feel is always true for the moment. And then it changes, because feelings are designed to change. Their motivations for change. So Tzipporah was expressing it properly. She did it one-on-one with Miriam. She was expressing her lack. She didn't ask Miriam to go talk to Moshe or Aaron. She didn't ask Miriam to solve the problem. She was expressing hope that these two other women, these two wives of these two prophets, would not have to have this lack in their life. This story, when truly analyzed, truly understood, gives us such a gift in knowing how important it is to these four levels. What is your consciousness? What is your kavanah? Do it at the right time. Do it at the right place. And do it with the right action. These four rights, these four issues, that if any of the four, the wrong place, the wrong time, the wrong action, the wrong kavanah, if any of the actions, any of these four are incorrect, you are doing a negative action. Oh, but my consciousness is, well, I'm really a sharing consciousness. How could it be that it's a problem? Because it was done at the wrong place or the wrong time. Knowing that these four rights is what I'm calling them, because I don't have another way to describe them. And I don't mean rights as inherently. These rights are inalienable rights as expressed in the independence, what's it called, Declaration of Independence in the United States. These rights are not human rights. They're conditions as part of the process of growth. They have to be the right time, place, action, and kavanah. They have to be unified with the concept of righteousness in order to be effectively removing bread of shame, to be effectively correcting the mistakes you've done in earlier times, earlier incidents. We're almost out of time, so I will ask, does anybody have any questions? And while you're unmuting yourself, I'll remind you that we have two more classes today. A Deep Zohar class at 4:30 West Coast time, and questions and answers at 7 p.m. tonight, West Coast time. And tomorrow, being Thursday, our 11 o'clock class will be the Esser Sefirot, continuing our study, and we'll be going into the first Mishnah of the Sefer Yetzirah. Are there any questions? I bid you all Shalom Gadol. Have a beautiful afternoon. Hope to see you in our other classes.
Shalom Gadol. Thank you.
Thank you. Shalom.
Shalom Gadol. Thank you.